Today's daf is daf Kaf Aleph. Refuah Shlemot Dvar Bat Dina Oz Avram Shuma Ben Chana Karmit Bat Neima Orli Pnina Bat Rachel Frida Chaya Malka Esther Bat Zipora Daniel Bat Mirum Chaya Rut Yosef Ben Rachel Leah Bat Rivka Avram Mordechai Ben Leah. Okay, we're going to start on Kaf Amud Bet near the bottom, about eight lines from the bottom. By Rami Bar Chama. Okay, we're having all these issues of what came up on Dafam on Kaf Amud Aleph is that the woman has to pay the money for the sofer to write the shtar, because we're worried that otherwise if we make the husband pay, then in the end he's never going to take care of it. So as a way to, again, provision against agunot, the woman in general was the one who paid the shtar sofrim. So now we have a question here. By Rami Bar Chama, hayu muchzakim b'tavla shehi shela. The get katuv aleha. The problem is, though, that the husband has to give her the get, meaning it has to be something that's owned by him, like the cloth. In other words, right? What the Gemara said on the page before was that how could that be if she's writing, she's being motzi the money? How could it be if the husband has to give her the get? So they say, well, there's this concept of hefker beit din hefker, that the rabbis have the power to move property from one to another. So they say, well, yes, she paid it, but now they're going to move the ownership over to the husband so he can actually give it to the wife. So now he asks the question, what if they took something that belonged to her and he wrote on it? The get katuv aleha. Okay, now it was hers. The get is written on it. V'harehi yotzeit mitachat yado. But they find it in his property. So the question is, can we assume that he gave it to her or not? Mahu mi amrinan. And the question is, actually, it's more complicated than that. The question is, if now we find it in his property, can we assume that she was makneh this tavla, this board, or I don't know how they translate it? What's the
tablet?
Tablet, thank you. A tablet, right, like a tablet. did he give the tablet, did she give the tablet to him to write the get on and give him ownership rights to it? And then he had it written up because it's in his property now, and then he's going to give it to her. Or mi amrinan aknuye aknitule, and she gave it to. What happens in the end? It's going to come right back to her, right? She knows it's going to come back to her. This, by the way, we see. And you know, what's the idea? Can we assume that she gave it him the rights to the tablet in order that he write the get on and then give it back to her? In other words, knowing that she's going to get it back in return. We do this, by the way, on the first day of Sukkot. If you don't have your own lulav, you have to have your own lulav because it says l'kachtem lachem. So on the first day, it has to be yours. It says l'kachtem lachem b'yom harishon. So if you don't have one, somebody gives you theirs. They're makneh to you, and they can even right. They can do it almanat lachzir. In other words, they're makneh to you for the time being, so you can own it for a moment, and then knowing you're going to give it back to them. So the question is, does the woman? This is really the question. Some of the mafreshim, it's unclear whether this is specifically woman-related. Okay, some of the mafreshim say it doesn't even mean a woman. It means anyone, just this case happens to be with a woman. Can we assume that she understands the details, that she has to be makneh to him temporarily, so that and then he's going to return it back to her, and that she actually gives him the rights to it in between? O Dilma, now here there's a question of the Nusaf. Ishalo yadala knuye, or you see it's in parentheses, it's supposed to be taken out. Or it doesn't necessarily mean the woman doesn't know how to, or just, can we assume that she doesn't know, she doesn't know that she's supposed to do that, and therefore he never actually acquires rights to it to be able to write on it. Amar bai, tashma. Let's learn from here, from a different case that's nothing to do with gitin. Afhui idol kfar katan, this is a mesechet eduyot, where all the mishnayot are eduyot of people. Shaya b'tzad Yerushalayim, v'haya bo zaken echad, v'haya mavel l'chol b'nei hakfar. Okay, he would write out. He would give out loans to everybody. Now, generally, who needs to pay for the schar tircha for the loan? The borrower, not the lender. Okay, but he would be kotev bichtav yado. And the assumption is he write in his own handwriting on his own shtarot. V'acherim chutmim, and then he would have people sign them. And then he would give them to the people, right? And then they would give them back. In other words, in general, who holds the shtar of the halva'a, of the loan? The guy who loans the money, the lender, because he needs to prove that he hasn't gotten the money back yet. So he holds it in his hands. If you give it to the borrower will just rip it up and say, oh, there was never such a loan. So he holds it. So now what do they say? Obama said lifnei chachamim v'yachshiruhu. They said it was okay. V'amai, habi'ina sefer mikneh. Doesn't it need to be, like it says, and this is in Yirmiyahu, when he buys, do you remember Yirmiyahu buys property from his uncle to show that the Geula is going to come and we're going to come back to the land? So it needs to be safer mikneh, that the guy acted, that the Lova actually owned at some point. But Leikan, the Lova never owned this property. So what do you say here? Why did this work? It must be that the guy, the Sakeng, wrote it out, had the guy sign it, gave it to the loaner to the borrower for a moment to acquire it, and then he gave it back to him. Otherwise, it wouldn't work. So therefore, what can you assume? Also in our case, the woman knows that she has to give the tavla to the guy and bring it back. But Amarava, Umay Kushya, Dilma Zakein Shane, Diyade Laknuye. Maybe a Zakein is different because the Zakein understood, right? The assumption of a Zakein is usually someone who's wise, who understands. And maybe this was an exceptional case. He was a guy who actually knew the nuances, right? You can understand this. It's all about nuances. If you don't understand those nuances, you're not going to do it properly. And then the husband will never have owned the rights to this tavla and therefore can't affect the get. Ela amarava mehacha. Let's learn it from here. Arev hayotze la'achar chitum shtarot, goveh minachasim b'nei chorin. If you have a loan now, you have a loan, it's signed, the deed is done, okay? You have the shtar. Now, if an arev comes, a guarantor to the loan comes after the signatures were signed and everything was done, and he writes a little handwritten note saying, I promise to be a guarantor for this loan, then he becomes a legal guarantor for the loan, and you can then collect the loan from his free property, okay? Not from the Chasim Shoabadim, but because there's no real shtar, because there's no edim that signed on, right? There's edim that signed on the shtar itself, but not on the arev coming and saying, I will be a guarantor for this loan. So now the assumption here is also, it's the same thing. In order for him to actually write on this shtar, he has to acquire rights to the shtar. And then what does he do when he's done acquiring the rights? Who gets the shtar in the end? The lender. So therefore, he must have acquired rights to it at some point. So the lender must have given it to him temporarily to acquire rights to be able to write on it. And then he gave it back to him. So here you see that the lender must have known the halacha of passing over the rights temporarily. So Amravashi, Maikushya, Dilma Gavre Shane, Diyadal Aknuye. So now they finally make the distinction between men and women. And what do they say? This is, you know, the anti-feminist argument. What do they say? That the men, okay, now again, you have to understand this from a societal perspective. The men were busy with business dealings all the time. And they understood the nuances of the shtarot and who need to own them and all that stuff. So therefore, in the case when this arev signs on, the assumption is the arev is a man and he knew and he understood. Sorry, it's really the lender who had to have known the halacha about giving it to him temporarily in order to get it back. But when it comes to a woman, you can't necessarily assume, since she doesn't generally deal with shtarot, right now she's getting divorced, probably her first time dealing with a document, that she would understand this nuance. And therefore, you can't necessarily assume it. But now we're finally going to have our proof. Well, I know in the end, you can assume. Amar Rav Ashi Mehacha, let's learn it from here. Isha kotevet et gita, v'haish kotevet shovaro, she'en kiyum haget ela b'chotamav. What do they say? A woman can write her own get, which means what? She can write it on her own cloth, right? And then give it to the husband to give to her. So if she can do that, well, then obviously this works, okay? And the ish can write his own shovar. What's a shovar? The shovar is the receipt that he paid, right? He writes the receipt that he paid his ketubah. And he doesn't have to write, he already paid his ketubah. And he can write the receipt, right? Why can he write his own receipt and why can she write the get? Because in the end, it's the chatimot of the edim that make that affect the shtar. Okay, this obviously goes with the theory that the chatimot are critical, right? Edi chatima karte, and that's the most important part of the get, as opposed to we've seen Rabbi Elazar that it's edi mesira. But basically, they're saying there's no significance. It's like my kids. This happened this morning. Mahani just said, "Sign your name here so that I can, you know, I need to write you sure that whatever it was." So, you know, in other words, it doesn't really matter who writes it. She could write her own permission slip. As long as I sign it, it's fine. Of course, I always wonder why she can't just sign my name for those kind of things. Not really a legal document. But anyway, I figured this morning when she asked me, I said, at least she's got a very honest, you know, it's good. It's me. You know, I didn't want to start messing up with that. Okay. So, Amar Rav, Katav la get, v'netano biyad avdo. V'katav la shtar matana alav. Now we're going to have some interesting cases. One issue to remember with get is what? A woman can get divorced against her will. Meaning, how does that happen? The husband can put the get into the woman's property. And if he puts the get into the woman's property, then she's divorced. Okay, let's say she owns a chatzer, okay, and he puts the get into her chatzer, she's already divorced. Whether she sees it's there, whether she knows it's there, whether, you know, she wants it or not, once it goes into her chatzer, it becomes hers. So now, I'm going to talk about what if he wrote her a get, v'netano biyad avdo, okay, meaning he wrote it on the arm of the Eved, like we saw in the Mishnah. V'katav lashtar matana alav. Now it's his Eved, okay? But what does he do? He writes her a shtar saying, I give you this Eved as a gift. And on this gift that you're going to now acquire is the get. Kina'atu umitgareshet bo. So now what happens? Because he wrote the shtar, she immediately acquires the Eved. Now listen, right. And the Eved has the get on him, which means she's accepted the get without it even going into her property because the Eved is now her property. Okay? We're going to talk about this in a minute, though. Va'amai. Chatzer mahalecheti. He's like a walking courtyard, okay? V'chatzer mahalecha lo kana. You can be kone. What did we say? If you throw it into her chatzer, you can be kone. But not if it's a moving chatzer. What's a moving chatzer? So the Eved. In other words, there's a whole issue of avadimu to what category they come now. For certain issues, they're considered like karka, okay, like land. But right, there's always karka and there's metaltilim, right? Movable property and fixed property. So avadim are considered more like fixed property. However, they're fixed property that moves. So since they're fixed property that moves, he can't be used to acquire anything. So they say, how could that possibly work? How could you have said that? So v'chitema be'omed. Maybe you'll say, well, he's standing still. So if he's standing still, he's not moving. V'ha'amar Rava, but you can't say that because Rava himself says, kol she'ilu mahalech lo kana, or maybe yoshev lo kana. If it were able to walk, it couldn't be koneh. Then if it's stationary at that given moment, since it has the potential to move around, it doesn't work.
What? Like the ox horns that couldn't be ridden on.
Ah, so the ox horns. So we're going to get to those in a minute. V'hilchata bikafut. So what did they answer? When he said that it worked with the Eved, it was in a case where this is very unpleasant, that Eved was bound, and he really couldn't move. Okay? In other words, they tied him up, and he was unmovable. And that's how it could have been koneh. Okay? Again, you have to... When you see a sugya like this, it seems to me that when... Right. The truth is it's tough. And what's tough about this sugya is it's not like different people saying different things. This is all what Rava said. And it's probably what happened here. And do you understand what happened here? Rava said this works with the Eved. They say, but Rava, you yourself said that a chatzar mahalecha doesn't work. And you yourself said that if he could walk, even if he's not walking now, that it...
Yeah.
So they say, so it must be Rava was talking about b'kafut. But it could very possibly be that there was a problem in the Masoret of what Rava actually said. In other words, maybe he really, you know, maybe there was some misunderstanding about what he said, because to say that he said this as if, you know, you could do this and tie up your Eved seems a little difficult. But being that they don't have any other Nusach, you know, they have to go with what they have. But it's difficult. But Amar Rava, here's another statement that Rava makes about a similar type case. Katav la get unitano b'chatzero v'katav la shtar matana alav. Okay, again, what does he do? He writes her a get, he puts it into his chatzer, and then he writes her a shtar matana that this chatzer is yours. Kina'atu umitgareshet bo. Okay, she now acquires the field, the courtyard, and with that she's divorced because the get is inside. So now the question is...
It's all trickery.
So the question is it trickery or is it just... Could be laziness. Could be laziness, right? In other words... maybe, you know, you have to remember also with a divorce, there's always agreements and money and dividing of money. So the fact that he's giving her his Eved or he's giving her his Chatzer is not unreasonable, right? He's saying, you take this and I'll take that. And the get happens to be in it. And I think really the question is, maybe he's planning to give her the get. But the point is that at that moment, it's already become hers. There's no need for Netina. As what they're saying is, let's say he wrote a get, it happens to be in his chatzer. He then says to her, this chatzer is going to be yours, writes her out a shtar in it. As soon as that shtar is affected, she's already divorced. She doesn't have to wait for him to actually hand it to her. So I don't know if he's necessarily trying to trick her, or it's just saying if this were the way things were to have transpired, well, then the effecting of the get happens even earlier than we would have expected. Okay, so I don't know exactly why you would have a case like this. It could be he's trying to trick her also. It's not clear. Okay, so now the question is, why did Rava need to talk about the Eved and the Chatzer case? Couldn't you have learned one from the other? So now we're going to say why, if you had each one, you wouldn't have been able to learn from it to the other. Utsricha. De'iyash mi'in an Eved, hava amina davke Eved, ava Chatzer, ligzar mishum Chatzera haba alachar mikin. If you would have just had Eved, you would have thought it was just true for Eved. But a Chatzer, we might make a gzera because of a Chatzer that would... he would give her... Right. This only works because he owned the Chatzer. But if he were to have written it in his friend's Chatzer, and then the friend... One second, let me make sure I get this right. Mm-hmm. Look at Rashi. Kigon shenatan la get b'chatzer chaviro. V'halach ba'al ha-chatzer u'machar la et ha-chatzer. Okay? In other words, he... But if he gave her the get, he would have given her the get.
No, he wrote it in the friend's.
Right, I guess he wrote it in the friend's chatzer. Right? I don't know why Rashi says natan la. But then he goes, right, and then he sells the chatzer. O natan la b'matana. And as the friend, it doesn't go through the husband. The friend gives the chatzer to the wife. Then, if the get happens to be in the friend's courtyard, that doesn't work. It only works if it was in the husband's courtyard and the husband gives it to the wife, because the assumption is he's giving it to her as part of his intent is to give her the get through affecting the shtar. So therefore, it only works if it's in his field, but not if he's in his friend's field and the friend sells the courtyard to the woman. So therefore, you might have thought, we don't allow it in his... Because you might, as a gzera, so that you shouldn't think it would be the same if the friend did it. V'iyash me'inan chatzer, let's say you just had the chatzer case. Havamina dafka chatzer. Aval Eved, remember, Eved only works according to the conclusion of the Gemara in a case where he's bound. So what are we going to say, obviously? We're not going to allow it in a case that he's bound, right? Ligzer kafut, atu she'eno kafut. Because then you might think that you can even do it if the Eved wasn't bound. And therefore, it has to teach you both cases. Okay. Amar Abaye. Michte chatzer mehecha it rabe. Where do we learn the din of chatzer from? Don't we learn it from miyada? Right, what does it say? V'natam biyada, right? It has to go into her hands. So ma yada, now, what's true about a yada, a yad? Ma yada di'ita bein midata ubein ba'al korcha. Okay? Just like you can put it into her hand, whether she wants it or not, right? You ever have this issue with like money, your friend wants to give you money for something and you say, no, I'm covering it. And then they stick it in your hand without you noticing, or they stick it in your pocketbook, something like that. So just like your yad, she can get the get, bein midata, bein ba'al korcha, because we've said already, the get can be ba'al korcha. Av chatzera d'ita bein midata, bein ba'al korcha. Now, what's the issue here though? Vaha matana, but what are we talking about here? Where he gives her the field or the eved as a matana, right? Not the field, the courtyard, as a gift. But a matana is different from a get, because a matana only works, you can only get a gift if you want it. If you don't want a gift, you don't accept the gift, okay? Without your knowledge, someone tries to give you a gift and you don't want it, it doesn't become yours. So v'ha matana midata ita ba'al korcha leita. Okay, but a matana can be even against your will. And therefore, how could this work in these situations against her will? Because he's giving her a matana. Let's say she doesn't want the eved. Well, then she's not divorced. So how could you say that as soon as he writes the thing on the eved and writes a shtar matana to the woman about the Eved, let's say the woman doesn't want to accept the Eved. So how could you say that the get is affected from the moment he does it? Let's say she doesn't want to accept it. Then it won't be hers. So Matkifla Rav Shimi Bar Ashi, how can you even try to make that comparison? What do you try to say? You tried to say we learn it from Yada. And Yada is Bein Midata Bein Baal Korcha, and therefore Chatzer is, only Baal Korcha, could be also be Baal Korcha. In this case, is Matana, and it's only Midata. What does he say? V'hash lichut lekabalah, t'midata ita ba'al korcha leita. V'kahave shaliach lekabalah. Can't you just say that he's like a shaliach lekabalah? Because a shaliach lekabalah The shaliach lekabbalah is something, right? In other words, he's trying to say, why are you making an assumption that it can only work if it can also be affected by al-korcha? Because we have cases where the woman accepts a get with someone else, with the shaliach, and shlichud can be even, can only be, if you use the shaliach for a get, it can only be with your, if she sends a shaliach, it can only be with her acceptance, because she has to send the shaliach lekabbalah. She doesn't send a shaliach lekabbalah, no one can accept the get on her behalf. Only she can accept it. So if she doesn't send a shaliach lekabbalah, she doesn't want it, he can't, the husband can't affect the shaliach lekabbalah. He can't say, you be a shaliach lekabbalah for the woman, because that's against her will, and she didn't send the shaliach lekabbalah. Only the husband can. So here you see that this whole thing about yada, and therefore chatzera, and all that is all against her will, and therefore, how can you connect it to this matana, which is only if she's willing? So now, what do they say? V'abaye, what's he going to say? Atu shlichu b'yadei trebe? You're trying to connect shlichu to this issue of yad, which yad, right? In other words, we have this issue of yada. From yada, we learn chatzera, right? From yada, we learn chatzera, because her chatzera is like her yad. And this, what did we say? Even baal korcha, right? And then we have, on the other hand, matana, which is, right, only if she's willing. So now they said, well, what about shlichut? Shlichut disproves the yada theory because it's also can only have a shliach lekabbalah if she's willing to have a shliach lekabbalah. So what do they answer? Oh, shlichut doesn't come from yada. Why are you connecting these things? Yada is one thing. Shlichut is something else. Where do we learn shlichut from? Mi vishalach vishilcha itrabe. It comes from a different limud that has nothing to do with yada. So you don't need to connect these two. Vibait ema. Or you could say that shlichut lekabbalah nami eshkacham ba'al korcha. There are sometimes unique cases of a shlech lekabbalah that would be against her will. What could be those cases? Shekein av mekabel get lebito ktana ba'al korcha. There could be where the father would appoint a shlech lekabbalah when the woman wasn't necessarily interested in getting it yet, but the father was, and in which cases can he do it? When she's a ktana. By the way, the Mefarshim point out that it's also if she's a na'ara. They say ktana to mean not if she's a bogeret. Okay, but a nara, remember there's that in between. There's the ktana, and then there's those 6 months. Once she has simanei bagrut, for the first 6 months, she's a nara. Even when she's a nara, the father can affect a divorce using a shaliach against her will. So therefore, you see that the shlichut thing doesn't necessarily contradict, because it's either shlichut is just not connected at all to the stain of yada, or shlichut has to do with... shlichut could be actually, there could be a case of shlichut that's negev ritzonah, and therefore doesn't disprove anything. Okay, now we're going back to the Mishnah. If you remember, you could write on an Aleh Shel Zayit. Okay, remember we brought an Aleh Shel Zayit? I said to Seth yesterday, I said, how do you think you could really write a get on something like this? Because it's really teeny. So he said, how about a really big one? I said, I don't think they come much bigger than this. I think they're pretty standard size. So then he starts writing. Hare muteret l'chol adam. So there you have it. I said, okay, well, I'm not going anywhere near accepting that. But anyway, right, in other words, yes, we learn that there's all these halachot, you have to have lines, you have to have this, but I guess, in theory, b'dievet, if you just had those words, you could probably be, you know, and then obviously you need the name, and, you know, I'm not sure exactly, but anyway.
By the way, one of the reasons we discussed when we first read this in the Mishnah, not only because it's meaty and you can therefore engrave in it or something, but also they don't wilt. They never dry up.
Mm-hmm. Right. They never dry up. Exactly. They don't dry up. They're thick. You can write on them. Right. Certainly a pen worked on them. I don't know about ink. But sure, ink would work on them too. Right. All those art projects kids do with leaves. Okay. Vishlama yad eved. Okay. So now we're going to go back. Okay. About the. Really, we're not talking about this. We're talking about the eved. We understand a yad of an eved. Why you wouldn't cut it off the eved, because lo efshar lemiktzie, right? In other words, you can't cut off someone's arm. By the way, okay, why can't you cut off someone's arm? Not because it's disgusting, but because if you would cut off his arm, what would happen? He'd be meshachrar, right? You're not allowed to be meshachrar your eved on purpose, so you're not allowed to cut off his arm because that immediately releases him. Anyway, For other reasons also, you shouldn't cut off his arm. Ela Karen shel para liktzie velitfela. Why are you giving her, okay, like Judy pointed out today, why are you giving her the whole para? Why don't you just cut off the Karen, which we can do. So amakra, what's going to be the problem? If you write it on the Karen of the para and then you cut it off, this goes back to what we learned earlier. That amakra v'kata v'natanla. Remember what we darshan from this? Mi she'eno mechusar ela ktiva v'netina. Okay, it can't be missing anything from the time you wrote it to the time you give it to her. Okay, I want to make sure I'm understanding exactly all these words right, that it's
but you could technically give it on a separate board.
Right, you have to it has to be ready to be written and given, but if you write it on the Karen Shel Para, it's mechusar tzurich maaseh shel ktisa. Right. Yeah, that's the way I understand. I don't know why it says it's not mechusar ktiva. That's why I got confused. It's not missing the writing. It's already written. But the point is you can't have anything between the writing and the giving, so you can't have it that after it's written, it needs to be cut. That's a maaseh. You could cut it first.
Isn't the monetary value that that's part of the divorce settlement? Isn't the point of a slave and the point of a cow and the point of the land that these are things that have monetary value, so they would be part of the settlement?
So they'd be part of the settlement, sort of. But I think it's the issue here is that if you write it, it's, let's say, obviously you could cut it beforehand and then write on it. But let's say you wrote it on the Karen of the Para, then you would have to give her the entire Para, whether you like it or not, because assuming you want to use this as your divorce document. Because there's not allowed to be a break, because it says v'katav v'natana, between the writing and the giving. So if it needs some act, like cutting it, we saw this with the talush, the same thing, right? It has to be talush me'akarka. If you write on an aleshel zayit, right? You can't, and you have to, it can't have to be cut. That's already, even though cutting is not a big maaseh, maybe with the Karen of the Parad is, but not with, you know, just ripping something out of the ground, but it can't. It has to be ready for giving from the time you write it. And this is not ready for giving unless you give her the whole para, and then it would work.
But she would have to own it first, because she has to own the...
Right, so how does it work exactly with... So she, the truth is she doesn't have to own it, she has to pay the money for the sofer. That was the whole issue. The question was, if she did own what he was writing it on, then can we assume that she was maknet to him and he gives it back to her? But she doesn't actually have to own it. He has to own it. She has to pay the schar sofer for a separate issue, and that's just because we're worried about a guna. That weird case we started with was, what if she did own the thing that it was written on? Can we assume that she was maknet? She gave him rights to it temporarily, knowing it was going to come right back to her. That was the question. But she doesn't need to own it. She just needs to pay the schar sofer. What were you going to say? What were you
asking? The woman's not allowed. She can't write it herself because she's the woman.
She can write it herself. That's what we saw. Yisha kotev et gita. Yeah, that was that source we saw in the end that proved our point. She can write her own get, okay? Assuming she knows how to write. Right, in those days, I don't know. You know, you saw not everyone knew how to write in general.
We don't post it like that, right?
Only do we use that nowadays? Right. Nowadays things are a little different with gitin. I mean, whether, again, if bidyeved, if she did, according to this, it would work. You know, or right now there's like a whole ceremony. There's things that, you know.
No, but specifically about the writing, I'm pretty sure now a woman can write a ketubah, but she can't write a get.
You think a woman can't write a get? I'd be surprised. I have to look it up. I know, you know these things better, I know.
Sure.
Well, remember, the get is written at the time that the get is affected. It has to be written lishma, and they do it when they do it now. They do it in the Beit Din at the time. They don't leave tfasei gitin floating around, you know, empty ones. Right, I think it's just a society thing. Especially, they're doing it in a Beit Din, you know, that it's usually a male-centered thing. But I'm going to look it up.
But
okay.
You can't do it on a living thing, right? Because the living thing will die, and then she doesn't possess it. Right?
No, she could possess it before it dies.
And then what? And then 30 years
she doesn't later, need it late. She doesn't need the get.
She has the shogeir.
So first of all, nowadays they write a maaseh Beit Din that says you're divorced. Okay, apparently they tear the get in the court after she gets it.
But what about then?
But she just has to acquire it. Once it's acquired, well, remember, there's the Eidei Mesira who say, we know that you were divorced. That's the other question. What about the Eidei Chatima? In other words, the Eidei Chatima are like a living proof, not a living proof, a proof from a document, as opposed to the Eidei Mesira that you'd have to go find. And that's the whole reason why they say, again, according to, if you say Eidei Mesira Karte, which we paskin like, that it's the ones who see the giving of the get, that's the most important. You have the Edim chatmim al haget just so you have some written proof about it. But really, it's the Edim that saw the transaction happen, you know, the passing over of the get. So as long as you have Edim about that, you don't need the get anymore.
It seems so problematic, though, because all the Edim can die. Four Edim can die.
Yes.
And then you have nothing.
Right. I think the assumption, though, is that people knew about it. People, you know, but that's the whole question here. That's the whole issue of the Edim here. We're going to get in the fourth paragraph when they say, Edim chatmim al haget mishum tikkun olam. Exactly for that reason, because what are we going to do if, you know, if the people are dead? It's exactly what the Gemara talks about, the Mishnah gets into, and the Gemara talks about it a lot. You can't find the Edim, what are you going to do then? So you need some sort of proof. Then you obviously have the problem that the Edim signing, you know, you have to know that they were good Edim, and that's the whole thing of a Fanei Nechtam, Fanei Nechtam. So the whole Masechet really revolves around that issue. How are you going to prove it? But it doesn't have to, I mean, we saw that case where he gave her the get and then threw it in the water, you know, then she threw it away. She burned it. In other words, you don't need it. It's the giving of it that's important. As long as she acquires it at that moment, then it's hers, and then it doesn't, you don't need it. Okay? Okay, Rabbi Yossi Haglili Omer. Okay, what was Rabbi Yossi Haglili? Go back to the Mishnah for a second. He said,
why would you write a get on a word?
So I guess you just didn't have other things to write it on. It happened to be, you know,
just accepting.
Right, and it doesn't shed. We talked about like other horns of animals shed and things like that. So it was just, you know, you have to. Look, part of it, I think, is not necessarily realistic. They're not talking about reality. They're talking about, in theory, if you were to do such a thing. And also, who knows? Who knows what they wrote on in those days and what, you know, what types of things they had at their, you know, you see, like, this tabla. They took this tablet she had because maybe they didn't find the other one, so they took the one she had because, you know, that's what they had. They didn't have paper around all the time. Okay, so Rabbi Yossi
Haglili. I don't think they had paper at all.
Right. No, I mean, they had parchment. I'm saying they didn't have parchment. Right. Right, exactly. So, yeah. Right, so that's why she would take her thing, give it to him, she'll get it back, and then she'll have her. We'll see some other cases also where you could see finances are a bit of an issue here. Okay, Rabbi Yossi Haglili, at the end of that Mishnah, said, okay, like kind of along Cindy's lines, why would you be doing this? He says, "Ein kotvin lo al davar sheyesh baruch chayim, v'lo al ochalim." Okay, you cannot write a get on, you know, find a piece of paper, parchment, something. Find something you can write on, because you can't write on anything that has ruach chayim or is food. Okay, food, he's talking about the aleshel zayit, we said, because it's a food for animals. My tamid Rabbi Yossi Haglili, what's his reason? D'tanya, it says in the Braita, sefer. Remember it says sefer kritut? So eli ala sefer. It sounds like it has to be a sefer. Minayin l'rabot kol davar. From where do you learn that it doesn't necessarily have to be right? Sefer, they assume it means like a parchment. Where do you learn that you can write it on anything? Tamud lamar v'katavla. V'katavla seems to imply mikol makom. Anyway, you can write it. Imke matamud lamar sefer. So then, if so, if you can write on anything, so why does it say the word sefer? So now they're going to say, ma sefer davar she'en bo ruach chayim ve'eno ochel af kol davar she'en bo ruach chayim ve'eno ochel. You can write on other things. It doesn't exactly have to be parchment, but it can't be something that's still alive or something that's food. Okay, so it's trying to categorize what types of things can you write on. Birabanan. So what do Rabbanan do if they think you can't write on all these things? How do they darshan those words? Iktiv basefer. If it had said basefer, then kitaka marta. Then I would have agreed with you. But hashta diksiv sefer. What does sefer come to imply? Not what you write it on, but what you have to write. What do you have to write? Lisfirat varim huda'ata. You have to explain what it is this document is, okay? Which is like the words I said before, hareat muteret lekol adam. In other words, it's not just saying we're getting divorced, but it has to describe, because we're getting divorced, what's going to happen now? You're now mutar to marry anybody else, okay? You have to describe things more in depth with more words. So that's why it says sefer. Sefer milashon lissaper, and not what you're writing on, but what you're writing. Birabanan, hai bekatav my avdele. So then Rabbanan, what are they going to do with Bikatav? Because doesn't Bikatav seem to say what you write? And Sefer is what you write it on? And yet they're saying Sefer is that you have to write, you know, lots of words. So what do you need Bikatav for? Mibayale biktiva mitgareshet ve'ena mitgareshet bekesef. To teach you that it has to actually be written. In other words, Sfirat Varin can be done bal peh. You could say, like you say at a wedding, Hareh Mekudeshet Li, right? Hareh Mekudeshet Li. Here, right, you can't just say Hareh Megureshet Li veHareh Mutar L'chol Adam. You have to actually write it. That's why it says V'katav. What? Why would you have thought maybe you could be Mitgareshet B'Kesef? Obviously because Sakadat Tachamina, you might have thought, Akish Yitzia LaHavaya. Mahavaya Bekesef, Af Yitzina Nami Bekesef, Kamashmalan. There's three ways you can get married, right? Bekesef, Bishtaru, Bibi'ah, or engaged, right? Halachic engagement. So therefore, you might have thought that you can also get divorced in three different ways, or in, you know, at least they're suggesting Bekesef. So now that's why it says Bekatav, to say it has to be a shtar. So the Sefer comes to teach you, you have to express in many words the situation in your document. But the Katav comes to say it has to be in a document, and it can't be with money or something else. The Idach, so where does the other guy learn that it can't be Bekesef? If he uses Sefer to teach you that it has to be like a Sefer, right? You have to write it on something that doesn't have Ruach Hayim and is more like a parchment. So now, what do they say? Where does he learn that it can't be Bekesef? Nafkalemi Sefer Kritut. Sefer korta ve'ein davar acher korta. Because it says sefer next to the word kritut, remember this word kritut? Kritut means to make a break between us. So sefer kritut comes to say that a sefer korta, but ein davar acher korta. Okay? In other words, only the sefer can work to make this separation, but anything else can't work. Be'idach. So what's the other guy going to do with the fact that sefer is next to the word kritut if he doesn't need it for that? He needs it for this. That you need something that's koreit. You need to have in the sefer something that splits the two. So what is that? Okay? If you say, this will be your divorce document on the condition that you never go to your father's house, or on the condition that you'll never drink wine, that's not making an absolute separation between them, because she's not necessarily divorced now. It's conditional upon some open-ended condition. Okay? And therefore, Sefer Kritut comes to teach you it has to make an absolute separation in a certain time frame. Now, what case would be okay? Ad shloshim yom harei zeh kritut. Okay? But if he said, this is going to be your get on the condition that you don't drink wine for the next 30 days, then when 30 days are over, that will be a get. So that is Davar Korei Beino Lebeina. But the first type is not. V'idach mikaret kritut. So where does the other guy learn this from? He learns it from the fact that it doesn't say sefer karet, that separates. It says sefer kritut. Because it says sefer kritut in plural, you can learn from it two things. Right, both that you need a sefer to be koreit, meaning it has to be written, it can't be kesef, and he learns that it has to be a davar ha-koreit b'ino l'beinah, because it says of a plural. The idach, but the other guy, what will he say? Karet kritut lo darshe. He doesn't darsh in this double lashon. And that's how we end it, right? It's the ping pong that we always have. Well, if you learn that from there, where do you learn that? Okay. Next Mishnah. Ein kotvin, this we've actually seen already. Ein kotvin b'mechubar lakarka. You can't write on something that's attached to the ground. This has to do with that whole issue of, right, it can't be chaser ma'aseh, like we said earlier today. That it has to be, you write it, and then you can immediately give it. But katvu b'mechubar, let's say you did. Talshu, you tore it off. V'chatmu, and then they signed when it wasn't mechubar. V'natnula kasher. Okay, that would work. As long as the signatures, right, this again goes to that whole machloket, what's more important, right? Is it the signing? Is it the writing? Is it the giving, right? So what does he say? As long as the chatimot are done b'talush, that's okay. Rabbi Yehuda posel, ad sh'teik tivato v'chatimato b'talush. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it's not good enough just to have the signatures. It has to be actually written when it's already off, detached from the ground. Rabbi Yehuda ben Batera omer, now we're moving to a different issue. This also connects with our last Mishnah about the geo and the diphtheria and all the inks you could write on. Now we're going to talk about what substances not can you write with, but can you write on? What types of things can you write on? Ein kotvin lo al haniyar ha-machuk. Okay, what's niyar machuk? Niyar machuk is if you can see from the parchment that something was erased, then you can't use that. Okay, if it's noticeably that something was erased, you can't use that. Velo al ha-diphtheria mipnei shehu yachol lizdayek. Diphtera is something that you could erase without noticing. Because it's not noticeable if you were to erase on this, okay, so this is all up your alley about different parchments and how you, it's good. So if it was diptera, so you couldn't use that because you can actually forge a document because you could erase something and rewrite on top of it, and therefore we won't ever know if it's a real document or a forged document. But Chachamim machshirim. Chachamim say it's okay.
But they don't need to keep the document.
They don't need to keep it, right. So the question, I guess, is maybe it was written and then it was taken back by, you know, maybe at some point from the time it was written and signed until she got it, you could forge it. It's a good question. If you don't really need to keep it, then why would it be okay? You'll see also Chachamim say it's fine. So maybe that's also part of the reason why. Okay, we'll stop here for today. We'll pick up from the Gemara tomorrow.
So do they end up talking about the ink or what you write with?